Well, good morning, and welcome to United Lodge of Theosophists on this solstice time of year. We'd like to inform you that this lodge is open to the public twice weekly, on Sunday mornings, of course, as we all know. It opens at 10:30, and class begins at 11 promptly, and it is over at 12:30. Now, our class this morning is entitled The Universal Meaning of Christmas, and next week our topic will be New Year and New Cycle. Now, on Wednesday evenings, we also have the building is open from 5:15 to 7:15, where the library will be open and one can study or do reference work. This class begins promptly at 7:30 and is over at 8:30. Presently, during this winter season, we are taking up the Ocean of Theosophy. We're taking up the principles of man, man's constitution. And we're just finished talking about the desire principle. And next week, we are going to be talking about mind. Okay. Yes, sir? No. Okay. Mind. And we all have one. Now, along with this, we are given the opportunity to participate in this theosophical movement. We can participate through activities or responsibilities that one would take up in this lodge or in any other lodge, because it is sustained through voluntary contributions of time, service, and money. It's the effort and the attitude that we must engender in ourselves to help humanity in whichever way we see best suited. Now, theosophy gives you the opportunity to help change the mind of the race, because these ideas are the foundation for change. As we all know, if the idea is not there, it does not appear. We all know that we grow from ideas to words to action, and this is how we create our future. So, the lodge gives us an opportunity to study together. And this studying together is done independently. So we're independently devoted. And we're not attached to any theosophical organization. And we're always looking towards the great founders of this movement, those elder brothers, those perfected beings. Now, this work that we have on hand is very lofty. And so there we don't have the time really to take part in the side issues of the day. Our concentration is on these truths, these ideas. And they're founded in the very foundation, fundamental principles of theosophy. Through a practice of these principles, we come to a realization of the self, which will therefore bring us to a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. We are Well, the basis for union is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. So we don't have a constitution, we do not have bylaws, nor do we have officers. We have a bond, however. But this bond is the similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. And the exemplification of these ideas and a truer realization of the self again. We regard as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without any distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And we welcome everyone to this association who are in accord with this declaration and who want to better themselves to help and teach others. We belong to no cult or sect, but we belong to each and all. Now, we begin this journey inwardly. And to do that, we are given the opportunity to make a declaration and make it known to others. And this declaration simply states, being in sympathy with the purposes of this lodge, we set forth in its declaration, I thereby record my desire to be enrolled as an associate, it being understood that such association calls for no obligation on my part other than that which I myself determine. So, that is why we're here. And in keeping with this idea of universal ideas, we come to our topic for this evening, for this afternoon. And I know we're all full of the solstice spirit, so we'll have a presentation of this idea of the universal idea of Christmas. And we'll have it presented, and then we'll open it up for discussion, questions, and answers.
Since Christmas is celebrated in so many different parts of the world, it has been shaped by a variety of influences. Many of the popular customs we associate with Christmas originally came from pre-Christian festivals like winter solstice and Yule, which were originally celebrated by pagan populations. As it is now, Christmas is a religious and a cultural holiday commemorating the birth of Jesus Christ. The exact date of Jesus' birth is unknown, but December 25th has been the traditional day to celebrate. The Bible does not give the date of his birth, nor does it say that we should celebrate the birthday. The observance of Christmas is not of divine appointment, and it is not of New Testament origin. Christmas is associated with gift-giving, decorations, music, carols, and other cultural traditions. Often these things take the center stage as retailers and businesses look to capitalize on the holiday spirit. This is not wrong in itself. Christmas is a peak selling season and important for the economy. However, Christmas isn't really about shopping for presents or surrounding ourselves with decorations and delicacies. Its true meaning is found elsewhere. Perhaps an examination into the history of a few customs may shed some light on the message of Christmas. Here are a few. December 25th. There is absolutely no proof that Jesus was born on that date. Church leaders of that time likely chose that date to coincide with pagan festivals held on or around the winter solstice. Gift giving, feasting and partying. Saturnalia is an ancient Roman festival of feasting and revelry in celebration of the god Saturn and of the winter solstice. This celebration provided the model for many of the merry-making customs of Christmas. From this celebration, for example, we derived the elaborate feasting, the giving of gifts, and the burning of candles. Christmas lights, according to the Encyclopedia of Religion, many Europeans decorated their homes with lights and evergreens of all kinds to celebrate the winter solstice and to combat evil spirits. Mistletoe and holly. The Druids ascribed magical properties to mistletoe, and the evergreen holly was worshipped as a promise of the sun's return. Christmas trees. Tree worship, common among the pagan Europeans, survived after their conversion to Christianity. One of the ways in which tree worship survived is in the custom of placing a Yule tree at an entrance or inside the house in the midwinter holidays. In this very busy world that tests our faith and beliefs on a daily basis, the meaning of Christmas can elude us all. Not just because of the commercialism that surrounds it today, but because of so many questions that spring to our minds at this time of the year. What about the population of the world who do not believe in God or Jesus? What about the terrorism, murders, and other horrors committed in the name of religion from ancient times to the present day? What universal message is there in Christmas in a world as diverse and multicultural as we live in? The answer isn't that hard to find and may surprise you by its familiarity. It comes from the teaching of all the world's great religions when we listen to that divine spark within ourselves that desires peace and goodwill for all of humanity, regardless of what we believe in or whom we place our spiritual faith or on what day the calendar says it is. This universal message was captured in a very popular poster from years ago that expressed in very simple terms the guiding tenet of all of the great faiths. Here are a few of those statements from that poster. From the Bible in Matthew 7:12, in the words of Jesus, "In everything do to others as you have them do to you, for this is the law." In the teaching of Judaism, from Rabbi Hillel, "What is hateful to you, do not do to your neighbor." That is the whole Torah. All the rest is commentary. From Hinduism, "This is the sum of duty. Do not do to others what would cause pain if done to you." From Buddhism, "Treat not others in ways that you yourself would find hurtful." And from Confucianism, "One word sums up the basis of all good conduct, kindness. Do not do to others what you do not want done to yourself." We all know what is right in our hearts, whether we believe in a God or Jesus or whether we do not. It is to be honest and forthright in our dealings with others, to visit the sick and comfort the afflicted. It is to be kind to all. It is to love. It is to forgive and ask forgiveness. It is to help the less fortunate, according to our means. It is to not forget those who came before us, who sacrificed greatly at times to carry forth the knowledge, message, and wisdom of the ages, and to never forget those who gave their all so that we could live in peace and freedom. Here is one word, I believe, that sums this up very nicely. Namaste. In its literal translation, it means, I bow to you. But what it truly means is, I honor the place in you where the light of God abides. When I am in that place in me, and you are in that place in you, there is just one of us. In other words, all things are connected, and we are all one. It is a way of acknowledging and recognizing that connection, that divine spark, which we all share. Theosophy would call this universal brotherhood. All life, all energy comes from one source. We are all connected, period. It doesn't merely extend to those we deem likable or those we believe or who believe what we do. We all come from the same source and are living expressions of the divine. We must learn to recognize that divinity that is within all things and respect it. You, my dear soul, are not a tiny, insignificant drop in a vast ocean. Your goal at this time of the year, as it is at all times of the year, is to learn to see the ocean in that drop. You are a divine part of a divine source that is so vast and immeasurable that the mind cannot comprehend it. The one divine source that lies at the core of you, me, and every other being. So at this Christmas time, with the annual retelling of the Nativity, with the symbols of the newborn king, the virgin birth, the star of Bethlehem, the shepherds, the three magi, and all the rest of it, something beautiful and wonderful is created in the air. A sense of peace and goodwill, which emphasizes the importance of what we should be striving towards and reminds us that we really are spiritual beings and what we can achieve if we work at awakening the spiritual part of us, a birth of the Christ element within us all. How to do this is the message given, which is forgiveness, compassion, and love, and that hope can never be destroyed. It's the message, the essence of this teaching, which is at the heart of the Christmas spirit. And so, my dear hearts, I say to you, Namaste and Merry Christmas.
Any ideas? Any questions? Yes.
The talk highlighted a few of the symbols which are unique to this time of year and celebration and their history. What would we understand to be the value or the purpose of these symbols? Besides being celebrated, what do they intend to do?
What is the purpose or intention of these symbols? Well, symbols are subjective. They depend upon our understandings and our background or whatever. But deep within all of us is a recognition of these symbols. We just need to uncover it. But the symbols reawaken in us something inside. Our intuitive nature, our reminder of our true nature, that there is a spiritual essence behind the colors that are seen this time of year, by the symbols of the Christmas tree or the triangle. All of them have a significance, but they are taken in by us. Yes.
Follow up, please. Well, it's sort of a maybe a chicken or egg question. Is it the symbols that awaken that realization, that awakening, or is there the awakening anyway at this time of the year, and the symbols only help us recognize it?
Yes, that is what is happening. There is that awakening, this coming of light. You know, astrologically, this is this winter solstice. That means this is the shortest, or it was the shortest day of the year. And that from now on, the days become longer, or the light increases. So around this holiday, the religions have piggybacked, taken advantage of it. Kwanzaa, Judaism, they're all in Christianity about light, about the return of light to the earth. So we're often told in theosophy that we should become intuitive enough to ride the wave of life, its ebb and its flow. Well, this is the rising tide. It is the most psychic and intuitive time of year between the solstice, the winter solstice, and the vernal equinox. So what's coming out is from what's inside of us. Those seeds that are there, we just need to water them and nurture them, and they will sprout. So it is a time of year for the opening up and the feeling of compassion and love and forgiveness and brotherhood. It's a natural feeling that's taken advantage of by those who understand it for that, for what it is, on the material plane. Yes?
Most of the symbols seem to have something to do with light. And even with Christ, there was the star that led the three kings. And so we're just wondering, what was the reason? Because we know in the talk that the birth of Jesus isn't really known. So is there a reason? Do we know if there's a reason why his birth date was just kind of plopped in the middle of the whole solstice celebration?
Well, you have to go back to the history of the early Christian church. And, you know, Saturnalia was was celebrated around this time of year. And it was festivities and gift giving, but it was debauchery, and it became frowned upon by the church. But there's also something else going on this time of year. Mithra was a god that was said to be born on the 25th of December. And many of the characteristics that were given to the Jesus, or that figure, are very similar to Mithra. So by putting it on the 25th, it was coinciding with many pagan holidays. So they wanted to bring the pagans into the church by enticing them with the same ideas. And but the pagans knew that this time of year was strong, and very intuitive. Intuitiveness in our nature was awake, and that they took advantage of this. So the church did the same. And it's all about light. It's about light returning to this hemisphere again, the days becoming longer again. But that's the outward expression. It's the inward recognition of this tide that's rising in us. And by using this tide, this rising, this recognition of our intuitive nature and of our heart quality, our compassion, we can, as the year becomes new and regenerated, make a resolution, move forward with new ideas and new purpose. But it begins now. Yes?
In the voice of the silence, it speaks of the birth of an arhan, or an adept, one who returns to help humanity. And it says there that all nature thrills with joyous awe and feels subdued. And we think that's part of this season. We not only feel the awakening, the thrilling of life in all of nature, but there's a stillness that brings that sense of peacefulness. We wonder if that has to do with that awakening of the spiritual impulse in nature and in ourselves at this time.
Yeah, we would have to recognize what is being said as being true. You know, it is an awakening. And like, there is a peace. There are songs that are sung about this time of year. You know, and I think many of us, as we were younger, we felt that peace. And now we, as we grow older, we try to regain that peace. But yeah, it's we recognize it, but we have become so enamored by the outside world and by phasmagoria, or all the changes of life around us, that we forget that stillness, that quiet, that we can return to ever observe this changing world, but know the purpose of it. Yes?
Well, if we consider humanity as the crown piece of evolution, we must understand that at some point in time, a light went forward in his head. He stood up. As above, so below. We only said that, and it would take hours to explain. Man's early observance of the seasons, the movement of the planets, and the sun and the moon. And when we stop to think of the term evolution, and we look up in the sky and we see the sun and the moon, and this time of the year we have snow and ice, and 6 months from now we'll have sunshine and warmth. Among those older civilizations, they recorded in various symbols or whatever their discoveries, and a system of how to behave, of civilized actions, was established. I remember the statements in the comic strips, "I am what I am, picture of an elderly man listening to the crying and the wailing of some other person younger. He remained silent the whole time. Then he put his finger on the complainant's head and said, "Get over yourself." Well, these types of things always puzzled us until we found out it's merely a statement of nature's sole purpose, evolution. And snow and rain and flowers are symbolic, yes, but they follow a line of evolution in ever more higher and higher states of being. And this, from my childhood until old age, I've been a guideline.
Well, we think the point being is that we're always in a state of change, and we're always moving forward. And it was stated at the beginning that man is the crown piece of evolution. All life forms are sacrificing themselves so that they too can enter the human kingdom. That is nature's purpose, to a higher and higher forms of consciousness. And in man, we are self-conscious. We are as the gods. So this self-consciousness, this light of lights, is, as expressed, is strong during this time of year. And we're talking about, we have lost the stars. We don't look up there anymore, for the same reasons we did in the past. There's too much going on down here. There's too many distractions. I would imagine, as we lived before, the stars were our attractions, and we probably could identify most of them in the constellations. But that's why we have the zodiac, an ancient remnant of our keeping track of time and change. But we're ever moving more and more to perfection, unless we become so selfish and depraved that we fall out. Yes?
It's interesting to note there that, as was said, the interdependence, the sacrifice of all of nature is going on throughout the year, all the time. But in the talk, it said that at this particular time of the year, we have a greater sense of giving, of sharing, of sacrifice, of helping one another. It's almost as if the heart of nature, the purpose of nature, is more strong in us, is more felt in us than at other times.
Yes, and that's why we need to take this opportunity, because it's the rising tide. Our awareness of this time of year, and as stated, it's in our nature. It's just there. Now we need to find a way to use it. That is our task. That is our duty, to take advantage of this time of year. So that we can be better able to help and teach others. Because what we understand about ourselves is what we can give to others. We can memorize, learn all these ideas, but if they have no meaning to us, we just are saying words. And if there's no attachment, no heart attachment to those words, we oftentimes pass them off as being incidental. They have no relevance because I don't feel it. I don't feel the truth to that. And the symbols that are so prolific during this time of year are the ones that we look at and we may pass off and not even think about them. But when we do think about them, they have a significance. You know, the Christmas tree, the evergreen, the eternal aspect, the eternal idea of evergreen. It's in the shape of a triangle of our higher self. There's all these reminders. You know, the lights on the trees, the star on top. Again, refer to the heavens. You know, and refers to, they say angels, but it's the good deeds, the blessings of life. And we're told that we do have, we're being aided. We can become the helpers of these great beings. And we are. By studying these ideas and bringing them to life again, not that they ever weren't, but in our own lives, it can't help but to reflect them if one considers them. Take it, we are told to take it into our heart. That is where the light is. And it will radiate all through our being. So the symbols that we have this year, during this time of year, just remind us that there's something more than just this body. The idea that we bring a tree into our house, we are worshiping trees. We are worshiping life. And to think that in those boughs of those trees are those spirits, those sprites of that winter wonderland, that where they keep warm and they hide from the elements and the harshness. Our imagination is sparked. But it's sparked in the form of our universal attachment to life. There's nothing left out. We have these bodies and we have all these kingdoms that we are using that are in harmony with this intelligence. We don't do it consciously, but this intelligence has organized this body. You know, karma, we talk about karma. Well, we've done this. We've done a lot of things that we look at, we're not proud of. But look at these bodies we have. Look at these faculties which we have. Look at these blessings that we have as being self-conscious human beings, that we have every opportunity to fulfill our wildest imagination. And what's our wildest thought? Of perfectibility, of a Mahatma. You know, why would we want to do that? Well, it's called compassion. It's called, we are that universal brotherhood. We are responsible for all of life. We are, whether we wish to accept it or not. But we go through life with this responsibility. But the day we take it up is the day that a little more light comes into our world. Because, as said, the light shines in our highest nature. So the more that light can shine through is the more control we have over our lower nature, where we become the guiding light, not that animal nature. Because if the human nature does not take responsibility, that light does not take responsibility, the animal nature will. It will certainly react upon all the input that it gets from our eyes, from our ears, from our nose, from our taste, from our feeling nature. It will respond. Yes?
What was just said reminds us that the symbolism of the babe or the baby is very prominent with this holiday. But also that the initiates are referred to as innocents or babes or reborn. So what does it mean in this hidden sense, in this universal sense, to be reborn, to become as a babe again?
Yes. Well, we are reborn at this time of year. But that reborn also is in the idea of knowing who you are. Knowing that unchanging nature, which dwells inside of every one of us. The eyes are the windows of the soul. Unchanging. That's a new life. That's a new understanding. That's an initiation. And there are many initiations. There are many unfoldments of the truth behind the idea that we are divinity. That everything, or there is nothing that is impossible. That what stops us, what binds us up, what is a knot, that Gordian knot, are the ideas that we hold. They twist and tie us up. That's all they are. That if that light, you let that light shine through our very nature, it will light up all those nooks and crannies of our life. And we will have an opportunity to see it. And that's an initiation. The voices you hear are the gentlemen that are fixing the heat. Yes. The back row, please. The back row, please keep it down. Keep it down.
We see the system as perfect because we have been preparing since August and September. Jams, jellies, smoke meat, everything stored in the ground. Somehow the elders knew that by this time of the year, snow would be 10 feet deep. And if we didn't take care of the summer, we'd freeze to death. So we have a large tent where everybody congregates, celebrates the harvest, and are happy because now the sun will return to spring and summer again. And it's justice, harmony.
It's hope. It's hope.
Yes.
It's hope.
In the beginning, you have established a great system of communal living together. And only human beings.
Yeah. Well, the winter solstice, and from now, it winter is contracting, and makes us come together to keep warm. But there's a warmth of knowing someone else. There's a warmth of caring for someone else. There's a warmth in all of that, which makes us human. So this time of year we take advantage of because it does bring us together. You know, we certainly see it, the holiday itself, when family comes together. But again, it's that time of year. and people take advantage of the influence that is present. There's the symbols are something that we go through life, always have. It doesn't matter what time of year it is, the symbol is always there and reminds us of our nature. So even in the summertime when we see an evergreen or we see holly, we're reminded, oh, you're still green. You're still alive. Yes?
What does the star remind us of? There's the star of Bethlehem, stars in different religions. Voice of the Sun speaks of the star, burns overhead. What does that remind us of?
Well, what does it remind us of? What does the star remind us of? Oh, I'm not going to answer that question. You have to think a little bit too. This is Socrates up here this morning. So what does the star? There's not a right or wrong answer. It's inside of you. What does the star represent to you? What does stars in the sky represent to you?
Your higher nature.
Okay. The higher nature. Yes?
More than that, it means the light of the higher nature that is not a reflected light, but is an inherent light within that illuminates our minds.
Yes. Yes?
And it's shaped like a person. So
it's shaped like a who?
A person.
A person, okay.
So it's as if it's, as was said, the light is coming through and enlightening the whole person. It's a combination.
It's very curious that it said in the philosophy that we are a star. We are a star, and we are to find out what star we are. Yes?
You've been talking about various symbols as they relate to this season. You have any thoughts about our cultural conditioning on sending Christmas cards during this time?
Well, you always have something to say, but we don't know. Perhaps others would like to.
Well, in a way, it's a way of spreading joy, greetings. They're giving from one person to another person a feeling of joy, of calmness, of hope.
Acknowledgement,
It's interaction. I think it's an English thing. I'm not sure where they were started with cards. Maybe somebody else knows.
Somebody else?
I'm a somebody else, and I don't know, you know, what it was. Wait a minute. I think with writing a card, the person knows that you're thinking about them. As you're writing it, you can see them in front of you, and you're thinking about them, and you're sharing your inner joy with them. And so they feel that. They get that in the mail, and they know that you were thinking about them.
Yes.
At this time of year.
Well, you're sending a message.
Yeah.
You're sending a recognition.
Mm-hmm. You
have any other questions? Follow-up? No?
I'm just curious about it. Because you had mentioned various symbols, you know, but no one said anything about the Christmas cards.
Well, I think it reflects human nature. It reflects something that's reflected in human nature. Yes.
Well, the Christmas card is more of a celebratory tradition rather than a symbol. and it could only be prevalent when there was a widespread ability to write, and that's a relatively recent development, at least in our culture. So, but it does represent, we think, more universally in ageless, a gift of speech, or the gift of words, and reminds us that a gift doesn't have to be an objective thing. Mm. It can be the sharing of a message, of words, of knowledge, of wisdom, and that the highest gift, the highest service we can do for another is to give them those ideas, share with them those ideas that will uplift them. It doesn't have to be an objective present or something of this plane. It can be on the plane of ideas too.
Yes, that's very helpful. Do you have a question?
Well, it's in our modern civilization, we don't look up anymore.
I underestimate.
We're busy looking down. But when we were younger, there wasn't no such thing to distract us. So in the summer, you went outside and watched what was taking place in a clear sky. In the winter, you did the same thing, the stars. Stargazing is no longer engaged in as it was thousands of years ago.
Well, that's because our culture has changed. We spend more time inside than we do outside. And, you know, even 100 years ago, that wasn't true. Yes?
Well, I think it's a very lonely world without seeing the stars at night in the sky. And we can't see them because there's so much light that you look up in the heavens and you go out in a very dark area, you know, up in the Allegheny Mountains, and the stars, it's like a blanket, touches the earth. And you cannot avoid seeing them. But here, within the cities all across the world, they're blocked out. And then we forget about them. And then I think we're pretty lost and lonely without them. And there's that sadness that permeates this time of year also.
Yeah, well, yes, there are always two sides to a coin.
Three.
Sometimes three, yeah. And also, you know, Christmas was not celebrated until the early 1800s. Not in this country. The gift giving and all everything just sort of emerged and evolved from that. And Santa Claus was something that the church didn't want, because here's a supernatural being that can fly and knows what people want and if they've been good or if they've been bad. So the church found this very pagan and wished to stamp it out. But you see, they didn't succeed. But even the gift-giving became very pagan, became very commercial. So, you know, things evolve. Things are not static. But everything comes from something. So all the traditions we have come from traditions that we held in the past. But now we just reformulated them to reflect a certain idea. And most of the reflections are on outside of us. God's outside of us. But again, we have fooled the church, because this is a season when you begin looking within and acknowledging that light within, and acknowledging that light within every human being. Yes.
It's interesting that in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks of the three qualities of nature and how they color gift giving. And if we look at those three qualities, we see at this time of year that gift giving is not always pure and holy and sattvic, yeah, that there are tamasic and even rajasic elements in the gift giving at this, yeah, time.
You know, I think that's what probably most of us feel is the tamasic qualities, even the rajasic qualities, because we see it all around us. We see it, you know, we're bombarded with it if you turn the television on. It's even if you walk in the streets and there's the hustle and bustle, this sort of the rajasic quality is just bubbling over. And it can be disconcerting. Yes?
So, practically speaking, then, how, you know, just to expound on what was just said about the commercialism, is there any way that maybe this habit can be reversed at all? I don't know. It seems to get worse every year. All this, you know, all the sales and whatnot start at Halloween now. I mean, it gets a little out of hand.
Well, there's a great deal we can do. We have something that's really important that we can, if we want to change the world, I mean, if we really want to change the world, there's something that we can do. Change ourselves. Then we have changed the world. The things that you abhor with our culture and our civilization does not mean you have to participate in it. And doesn't mean that you have to fight it either. You have to rise above it. You have to rise above it. And you know, and that can be done. Yes?
I guess that's the last statement in terms of what you were saying. I personally think it's going to be very difficult to do, given the technology, artificial intelligence, and especially social media that we now have. I mean, just walking down the street and seeing people with their phones, imagine what they're doing now during this holiday, you know, with all this communication going on, where they're just conditioned into this.
Well, it's an intensity, yeah. Well, things will move along as they should. Things will happen as they should. But your degree of perception and understanding, if it is true and it is compassionate, will create a change. And we can't change anybody else. And people, as long as they look outside of themselves for the answer, even with technology, technology is a tool that can be used for our benefit. But we know, like the atomic bomb or the atom can be used for making energy, but there's also the other side of the sword. So it's not the technology that has to change, it's our morality has to change. Our ethics have to change. And the truth has to be realized that our answer doesn't lie outside of ourselves. The journey is within. You cannot tell that to someone who's in love with life and thinks that if they curtail any of that, they're depriving themselves of life. They have to come to this realization on their own. But by you having that realization, you help them. One last question. You did have your hand up.
Yeah. So these saviors can't save us?
No, these saviors can't save us. They can only say, hey.
Well, then why are they called saviors?
Because they show us the way where we can save ourselves. And that's the only way we are saved. Self-induced and self-devised means of saving ourselves. But the reality is we are saving everyone. When we save ourselves, we are saving, first of all, everyone around us. It has a ripple effect. It's very subtle. We may not recognize it, but your ideas and how you see the world does reflect in the world around you. The more you are committed to it and the more you can express it, the stronger it becomes. It's a process. It could be an instant or it could be many lifetimes in the works. But this season, this time of year, the solstice, brings us quiet and good cheer. For we are born again into the light and ride this tide to the spring when you can make it blossom forth into reality. Meeting adjourned. Thank you.